everybody, and happy International Women's Day for Wednesday. It's just amazing. You know, I love that we're doing this series on strong women. I love that I can be part of a church that champions the voices of women. I love and I'm so grateful that I have leaders such as Pastors Tom and Denise who are passionate about the fact that women can preach and lead in any aspect of church. I love that. Love, love, love it. You know, recently I visited a church where they don't have women that preach and they don't have women that lead in certain aspects of their church. And to be honest, I felt like I couldn't belong in that place. And that sense of not being able to belong or feeling out of place because I'm a woman happens in lots of different areas in my life, but in particular at work. So being a black female doctor can be very challenging at times. On most days than not, I face some form of sexism or racism or both. And the most common assumption that I face is that I'm not a doctor. Even though I wear a badge that says my name, Dr. Esther Onunu Cousins, on it, even though I wear a stethoscope, which is not a specific sign for a doctor, but most people that wear them are doctors, and most people associate a stethoscope with being a doctor. And most importantly, I obviously introduce myself as the doctor. Despite all of that, the typical response I get is complete surprise that I'm the doctor that's here to see them today, or an absolute disregard for my introduction, and they just go on to call me the nurse or the lady or just some person that's here to see them. And it's quite rare, pretty rare, that I walk into a bed space and they will actually presume that I'm the doctor that's here to see them and treat them today. And most times I'll walk in and someone's possibly on the phone chatting to someone, and I hear them hanging up on whoever they're talking to, and they're saying, gotta go, the nurse, lady, someone is here to see me. Never doctor. One time, I walked into a patient's room, and this patient was a teenager, and he saw me walk in, and he got his lunch menu out, and got out from the bed, and started to read out his lunch menu to me. And this one was actually quite funny, because he was super embarrassed when he realized that I was the doctor that had come to see him on the ward round, and not the person to take his lunch order. Now, I don't think my male colleagues ever really face this problem. You know, I think the male medical students are probably more likely to be called or presumed to be a doctor than I am. And I really hope that none of you get me wrong. I'm not offended by being called a nurse. I fully love and have the utmost respect for nurses, for my nursing colleagues. I absolutely love them. But if I wanted to become a nurse, I would have become one. But I went to medical school and I studied for a very long time to become a doctor. Now, the gender aspect of it is just one thing. The race aspect is a whole nother layer, because I'm never just a female doctor, I'm also a black female doctor. And being black adds this whole other layer, as I'm very careful to avoid the stereotype of being an angry black woman. So in short, I'm often made to feel, either by the patients that I'm trying to treat or by the colleagues that I work with, that I don't belong there, that I can't have a voice. Or if I do, my voice doesn't count because I'm a female, a black female, that I have to work twice as hard just to be recognized. As a society, we have come a really long way when it comes to women's rights and when it comes to equality, but we have a long way to go still. We have a long way to go when it comes to how society perceives women. And this series, as we've mentioned, is titled Strong Women. And it's probably not the first adjective that most people would associate with or describe a woman with. And if you look up the word strong and you look up on dictionary.com, which is the first place I went to, the definition given is having, showing, or able to exert great bodily or muscular power, physically vigorous or robust. And then the example beneath that description is strong boy. Right, interesting. Now, of course, strength isn't limited to physical power, and you'd have heard that in the panel last week, and I'm sure you'll hear it repeated across this series. But it's interesting to contemplate whether strong and woman are two words that people would regularly put in a sentence together, right? Or whether people think that they belong in a sentence together. I'm sure any woman in this room, any woman listening to this, would be able to tell you a story about a time where they felt like they didn't belong because they were a woman. Or a time where they felt left out of an opportunity because someone decided that they just wouldn't be able to do it. Or a time where they felt that they spoke out, but they were disregarded or ignored because a man's opinion was valid over theirs. Or maybe it was a significant contribution that they made, either to their home, to their workplace, school, or university, but it was overlooked, or it was deemed insignificant, or something that's expected for women to do. Women are often passed over when it comes to job opportunities, promotions, because there's this fear that they won't be able to manage, they can't handle it, they're too sensitive, they can't be promoted because at some point they're going to go on maternity leave. On the flip side, women of ethnic minorities, being labeled as strong can actually have a really detrimental effect. There are numerous articles and studies out there which report that black women are less likely to receive adequate pain relief in medical settings compared to white women due to racial bias. And this isn't something that's happened a long time ago. This happens still to this day. And part of it is because of this false belief that came about in the 19th century that black people have thicker skin and less sensitive nerve endings, so they don't experience as much pain and therefore they don't need as much pain relief. Not belonging or being undervalued isn't exclusive to women, of course. I'm sure everyone could recall a time where they felt that they haven't belonged somewhere, where they've been in a room and everyone stared at them thinking, why are you there? What are you doing here? Wondering why you're there. How have you made it into that room? They're glaring eyes on you, making you feel like you don't deserve to be there, that you can't do it. I'm sure that we've all felt like that at some point or another in our lives, but for women, this can be a daily truth in lots of different circumstances. And the challenge that women face when they don't belong means often that the door is closed to them before they can even try to put a foot in. And often as women ourselves, we feel like we can't take a step towards what we want to achieve because we're told that we don't belong. I mean, how can women be strong in spheres that are dominated by men? How can we be, how can we raise, how can we know strong women when it feels like they don't actually belong? So I want us to look at the Bible and to look at the book of Ruth this evening as we consider those thoughts. And if you've been in church for a while, if you've heard me preach before, you'll have heard me talk about the book of Ruth. So I'm just going to set the scene a little bit for you guys. So the book begins by talking about this Jewish family, and Naomi is the mother of this family, and they've moved from their homeland to a place called Moab because there was a famine back home. And Naomi, the mother of this family, we hear right at the start that she sadly loses her husband. Her husband, called Elimelech, dies, but she has her two sons who both marry Moabite women called Orpah and Ruth. And sadly, not long after that, her two sons die as well. So it's her and her two daughter-in-laws. So at this point, she decides that she's going to return back to her homeland. And she encourages her daughter-in-laws to return back to their homes and to their families because she had nothing left for them. She had nothing left to offer them in terms of their future. And these girls, they try and stay with her. They want to stick by her side, continue on this journey that she's about to embark on back home. But she persists that they should go back to their own families. And she paints this really sad picture of what life with her would look like. You know, they'd be leaving their home to go to a foreign land, somewhere that they didn't really belong. And they'd be leaving behind a better opportunity to get married again, to have children. And you might be thinking, these days, lots of people move cities, move countries, move across the world. It's not that big of a deal. Lots of people live happy, healthy lives, single and without children. And that is very true. But in that day and in that culture that Ruth and Orpah were living in, this was a big deal. And the prospect of giving up another husband or children would be a huge sacrifice for their lives. And they'd be leaving behind their own families, as I said, and their families were in Moab, and both of their mothers were still alive at this point. So it would just make more sense for them to return home. And Naomi describes this to them, and she doesn't know what she's going back to. Yes, she's going home, but it's been a long time, and she just didn't know how she would be able to provide for them. So choosing to follow her would be a definite risky decision to make, and because of that, she wouldn't have expected them to go on this journey with her. So eventually, we learn that Orpah, one of the daughter-in-laws, she does head back to her people back home, but Ruth, the other daughter-in-law, remains strong and brave in her decision, and it's reflected in this speech that she gives, which we're going to read together. It's going to be on the screen behind me, found in chapter 1 from verse 15. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." And when Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So one of the first things that we learn about strength through looking at Ruth is her brave loyalty, her bravery to step into the unknown and stick by Naomi's side. So Naomi was from Bethlehem, and as I said, it's been a while since she's been back home, but she didn't know how things were going to be for her, but she was still going home, and Ruth was making this promise to leave behind the only home that she knew, the only family she knew, and to follow Naomi into this place. She was sacrificing the likely security and stability and future that she would have at home to follow Naomi into a lonely and uncertain situation. And then we learn that Naomi obviously believed in the God of Israel, whereas Ruth would have believed in the gods of Moab, the gods that she grew up with. But she promises to join Naomi's religion. She promises to believe in the one and true God of Israel and forsake the gods that she grew up with. And despite all of their differences, despite all of the valid reasons, as we've learned, for Ruth to return to her homeland, she promises to stick with her until she dies. She makes a commitment to never abandon Naomi, even in death. And they're such powerful, powerful statements. And these weren't just words. She meant them with every fiber of her being and was willing to follow through on these words. She was a strong woman because of her brave and fierce loyalty. Secondly, we see her strength displayed in her hard work. So in chapter 2, we read from verse 1, so it says, "Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.'" So Ruth, she takes this initiative to go out into the fields and to find work. She's made this brave and bold decision, as we've learned, to follow Naomi back to her homeland, to follow God. But they need to find a way for themselves to survive in a place where she didn't belong. She sets out to find work, to find a way for them to support themselves. And this field that she worked in, this field belonged to a man named Boaz, who's part of the clan of Naomi's husband who'd passed away. And Boaz is there, and he sees Naomi, and he asks one of his people that's there, "Who does this woman belong to?" And she's described from the overseer as the Moabite woman who came back with Naomi, but she's also described in terms of her work ethic. He says, "She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." And after hearing this, after hearing about Ruth, Boaz extends kindness and generosity to her. And by allowing her to stay and work in his fields, she would be able to find companionship from the other woman, protection from other men, and refreshment. And as a foreigner, she wouldn't have expected anyone to show this generosity, this level of kindness to her. And you can tell if you read on her reaction to Boaz. But she's brave. She steps out. Instead of hiding or staying at home, she puts herself out there. She displays strength and initiative as a result of her loyalty to Naomi. And Boaz recognizes this, and he prays for God to bless Ruth. So Naomi and Ruth begin to see how God's plan unfolds for them through Boaz. Thirdly, we see Ruth's strength through her humble obedience. She puts her trust in God. She follows a woman who had lost everything, moves to a strange land. She takes these steps. Life if she was married. So she suggests that she appeals to Boaz. And in the book, Boaz is described as the kinsman redeemer or guardian redeemer, depending on which translation you read. And in Hebrew, that word is described as goel. And essentially, this role meant that you were responsible to buy back family land that had been forfeited or to carry on the family name by marrying a childless widow. This Hebrew word, goel, meant that that person had the obligation to redeem a relative in serious difficulty, like in those scenarios, and like with Naomi and Ruth, who were widowed and poor. So Boaz, as the kinsman redeemer, had the responsibility to ensure their safety. So Ruth takes on Naomi's advice about how to present herself, and she which Boaz responds, and we're going to read in verse 10, in chapter 3, verse 10. "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All of the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character." I love that. And chapter 3 ends on a bit of a cliffhanger where we get to a point where Ruth and Naomi are unsure if Boaz will be the kinsman redeemer because there's another relative that's a bit closer to them who could be it instead. But then at the end in chapter 4, we learn that Boaz will marry Ruth and redeem the family land and name. So Ruth's obedience throughout this journey, her obedience to God, results in joy and blessing for both her and Naomi. You know, she didn't let the fact that she was this poor, widowed woman in a foreigner's land where she didn't belong, where seemingly she didn't have any prospects, to get in the way of her displaying her strength. Because of her strength, she was blessed and she found favor. And this may seem or sound like this was all her doing, that she did this, that this was Ruth, but the book of Ruth is actually this beautiful story that shows how God works through people, that God is at work in every part of this story, that God's purpose and will intertwined with the decisions that Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz made resulted in this story that started off in tragedy, ending in joy. And not only is God at work through this book, but we also see Jesus in the book of Ruth. So we learn at the end that Ruth and Boaz, as I said, get married, and they go on to have a son named Obed, who goes on to have a son named Jesse, who goes on to have a son named David, also known as King David, who goes on to have a descendant named Jesus. And I love that Ruth, a woman who found herself in a place where she didn't belong, became one of five women to be named in the genealogy of Jesus. And secondly, we see how the role of Boaz, this kinsman redeemer, leads to our redeemer, Jesus. Jesus, both fully human and fully God, was able to sacrifice his life, not just for one, but for all of us. For all of us to be able to live a life of purpose, knowing that we are saved, knowing that we are loved. And surely I will love to give everyone opportunity to connect with Jesus, but before that, I want us to consider what it is that we can learn from Ruth, what this means for our lives, because I believe that strength is found in character. Strong women are women of character. One thing that I love about the book of Ruth is that there is no mention of what she looked like. There is no mention of her physical appearance, no mention of whether she was deemed to be beautiful or not. Boaz showed kindness to her and got to know her because of her character, because of her heart, because of her bravery, her boldness, her diligence, her humble obedience, because of her character. So 2 points for you guys this evening. And first of all, this one is for the women, all the women in here. Being a woman should not exclude you from living a life of purpose. When Jesus came and he died on a cross to save humanity, he died to save all of us. He rose from the dead so that we could all have eternal life. You were fearfully and wonderfully made, and you are loved by a God who works for the good of those who love him. So no matter what society tells us, no matter what history has told us, women are not called to live inferior lives. Thinking back to Ruth again, she could have gone home. She could have stayed at home with her family. She had no obligation to follow Naomi. She had no business being there in Bethlehem. It was obvious that she didn't belong. She was a foreigner. She calls herself a foreigner, but she remained brave. She remained loyal and obedient and showed this strength of character. You belong wherever God has called you to be because you are a child of God. So whatever door that has been shut, whatever opportunity that seemed out of reach, whatever position that you've been rejecting from, you do belong. Being a female does not and should not exclude you from reaching the goals that you want to achieve, because even if society tells you that you can't do it or that you're unqualified, you can trust in a God that calls you fearfully and wonderfully made. You can trust in a God that qualifies the called. You can trust in a God that loves you and equips you. You can trust in a God who chose to die for you because you are indeed worth it. And you don't have to have it all worked out. You don't have to know it all. Sometimes we do need to just trust and walk with God and watch God work, see his plan unfold. And perhaps it will be in ways that we won't have ever imagined, predicted, or in time that we would ever not expected, but it will end up being beautiful. So what now? What now for you women? Well, if you felt like you want to use your voice, then do it. Raise it. Be confident. Be heard. If you've been hesitant to take a step towards a dream job or opportunity in your life because it's felt out of reach, do it. Take the step. If you've been hoping to make a change in your life and do something wildly different, but you've been told that's not going to work, do it. Believe for the impossible. If you've stopped yourself from volunteering somewhere, working somewhere, or exercising somewhere because it seemed to be too male-dominated, go for it. Do it. You do belong. If you're in a position of leadership at work and you're one of few females in that position at your level and you're wondering, well, how do I raise future female leaders? Do it. Mentor younger women, mentor girls, empowered women, empower other women. If you're young, if you're dreaming to have a job or career that seems or is typically dominated by men, don't give up on your dream. You can do it. You do belong. Whichever part of life that you find yourself in, whichever sphere you find yourself in, find your God-given strength. I want to encourage you, women, that you can and do belong. So here's to you, my fellow women, to being strong, to believing that you belong, to trusting in God and walking in obedience. Ooh. Right, second point, and this is for everyone. Be soul food, not eye candy. Yeah. And this might be a saying that, wipe that tear, that you've heard before. And what I mean by this is for us to be people of character. You know, both Boaz and Ruth in that book are both described of having noble character. And like Ruth, I would rather be known for my character than my looks. Yeah, cool, be physically strong. Take pride in your appearance and how you present yourselves, but it's not the most important thing about you, and it certainly does not equate to strength. Strength of character far outweighs appearance. This concept of being soul food and not eye candy, of course, can stem back to the Word of God, to the Bible, and what God thinks of us. God looks at our hearts, our thoughts, our intents. In Samuel 16, when Samuel was looking to anoint the next king, he sees someone that he thinks should be anointed. And God says in verse 7, "Do not look at his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as a man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." Strength of character far outweighs appearance. God looks at our hearts. So how would someone describe you with regards to your character? Would they describe you as brave, as bold, as loyal, as humble, as obedient, like Ruth was? And for those of us that are Christian here, does your life display the fruit of the Spirit that we read about in Galatians 5:22? The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. None of those fruit have anything to do with your physical appearance, but everything to do with your character. Strong women are women of character. Strong people are people of character. So this week, I want to encourage you to examine your heart, to look at yourselves, to think about your character, and to pray. Because it's by God's grace that we are able to have the fruit of the Spirit. So if there's an area in your life that you think you're lacking in, pray about it and ask God to work in you and through you. As I close, women are strong. They are brave, they are loyal, they are fierce and beautiful people. And not all of society has caught on to this quite yet. And sadly, in some spheres, we have a long way to go for all women to be treated as equal in the way that God sees us and in the way that Jesus treated women. But as the church, we can be that voice that empowers women, that champions women, that spurs each other on in love. We can be those people of character, people that understand that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, irrespective of our gender. We can be a place that anyone can call home, that anyone can find a place to belong. So let us, all of us, be those strong women of character wherever we find ourselves. Let us all be those people that can reflect the love of God in the world through our character. You know, I believe if we do indeed do this, that we will know more strong women, that we will raise more strong women, the kind of women who have strong faith, the kind of women that believe for the crazy, impossible, wild dreams, the kind of girls who believe that anything is possible because they believe in a God for whom nothing is impossible for. I believe if we were those kind of people, that kind of home where anyone can belong, that we would see more women walk into our church knowing their God-given purpose, taking steps into their God-given purpose, that we would see more lives changed, that we would live in a fairer and more equal society, and ultimately, most importantly, we would see more and more people come to know the Savior who died for them, the Savior who loves them. I'd love for us to pray together right now. God, I thank you that we are able to love because you first loved us, that you know our most inmost beings, that you fearfully and wonderfully made every single one of us, male and female, you died for us. For us to live lives of purpose, for us to dream for the impossible, knowing that you are able. Lord, I thank you for what you're doing in everyone's hearts right now, in the hearts of the women in this room, for them to believe that they are strong women of character, that they do belong, that they can do it because you are able. Lord, I pray for all of us right now. I pray that you help us to examine our hearts, to find those areas that we are lacking. And Lord, I pray that you fill us. I pray that you do the work in us that only you can do. And may it all be for your glory. In your name I pray. Amen.